This is the Jerry Callahan Show.
Right, it is Thursday, April 18th, day three of the trial of the century. Jury selection is underway in both trials of the century. We have two trials, both of them scandals. Trump trial is underway in New York. They already kicked one of the jurors, who we thought was selected, impaneled. She's out because she can't be impartial. I believe she was a nurse, a single woman. That's good news for Trump. He needs some good news because, as we pointed out yesterday, he ain't going to get an acquittal. It is impossible. This is a New York jury. Almost all of them get their news from the New York Times. Almost all of them appear to be Trump haters. So I think once they get the jury seated, it will be time to go straight to this sentencing phase of this trial because he's not going to win. He might get a hung jury. Maybe there'll be one holdout. That's the only hope. In this sham trial in New York, we appear to have another big, big, big trial here in Massachusetts, the trial of Karen Reed, the 44-year-old former adjunct professor at Bentley, who is being charged with murder for killing her boyfriend, former Boston cop John O'Keefe. It is just a wild scene here in the Dedham courtroom. And our friend Turtle Boy has kind of blown the case wide open. He's written 300 blogs on the case. Hell, he's been charged with witness intimidation. He did 60 days in jail from where he blogged, and it was great. It was some of the greatest stuff he's ever written. Life in lockup. We will get to Turtle Boy. He's coming up. Hang in there. But we got to start. We have to start with our empty shell of a man who is running for re-election. It is, I know we do this every day, but we have to do it every day. It's kind of important. There are people, millions and millions and millions of people, who still plan to vote to return this corpse to the White House. And he's not getting any better. I got bad news for you. The cognitive issues he has, the dementia, it's getting worse. The idea that they can carry this empty shell over the finish line in November is becoming more challenging by the day. They will try. I know I say this every day. The media has one job. Help this feeble old man make it to November. Help him through these tough days. As we went over yesterday, Tuesday was a really big day in the campaign for president in 2024. Trump had a great day. He left court. He went to the bodega in Harlem. Hundreds of people showed up. They chanted four more years. They chanted Trump, Trump, Trump. There were no boos, no heckling. He spoke to the media. After the event, the Bodega Association, which represents like 3,000 bodegas, endorsed him. So bodegas are for Trump. Bodegas for Trump in 2024. He can't go outside New York, essentially, because he's tied up in court, which is the plan, which is what their goal here was. Make sure Trump couldn't get out of New York. He stayed in New York, and he had a great day. At the same time, his feeble opponent went to Scranton, his alleged hometown, to a nearly empty auditorium and slurred and stumbled through a speech. We're going to get to the most amazing cut from that event. But yesterday he was back in Pennsylvania. I believe he was in Pittsburgh. Here he is appearing, if you're watching along, appearing at a gas station convenience store called Sheetz. I guess they said, let's see if we can match Trump. He went to a bodega. Let's go to a convenience store in Pittsburgh. And it went as you would expect. God, this is embarrassing. Don't they know that nobody loves Joe Biden? Don't they know that the only people voting for him are people who just don't like Trump or people who don't pay attention to the news? He can't scare up a crowd. It's impossible. There is zero enthusiasm for this pathetic old man. So he shows up at a convenience store. Nobody cheers. Hell, nobody shows up. and there's nobody there. He just walks up to order whatever and just kind of looks around like a lost soul. Again, you wouldn't allow this man to walk your dog. You wouldn't trust him to bag your groceries. There is no job he could do at this point in his life. And yet he wants the toughest, most important job in the world. He wants to keep it. How there could be anybody out there who thinks he's physically, mentally capable is beyond me. But let's get to some of the comments from our God. Yesterday, we got a new one from Joe Biden, who is a pathological liar, who is incapable of telling the truth, who can't handle a simple question. He has 6 or 7 thoughts that are in that decaying brain, and he just blurts out one of them anytime anyone asks anything. We don't have to play this, but he was asked about steel tariffs yesterday, steel tariffs on China. His answer, don't jump. He tells the reporter, don't jump. Now, I'm looking at the video right now. There are no stairs. There's no balcony. The reporter's not up high somewhere. But those two words just are stuck in that brain. So they come out at the most uncomfortable, awkward times. Don't jump. Making it worse, by the way, is the reporter laughs. But that wasn't the most embarrassing gaffe. I don't even know. This isn't even a gaffe. This is Joe Biden making up a story about his uncle Finnegan, who he calls, what's he call him, Bozy? Who was, I mean, if this were Trump or this were anyone else, it would have been everywhere on the news. But we're just used to this pathetic old man making up stories. This is a man who belongs in a nursing home telling these stories to his fellow nursing home residents. He's at a crowd. And by the way, if you're watching the video, the crowd is falling asleep. They're just sitting there. They're just behind him. You have some union hacks who just hold up signs and stare. They're bored. They're probably on the clock. They're probably supposed to be at work, but they're there supporting their guy. And they're looking around like, what is going on? And somehow he veers off on this tangent about how his uncle died in World War II. Now, with Biden, it can never be just, yeah, my uncle went down on a plane, which he did in World War II. No, it has to be embellished somehow to make it more dramatic. It has to be a fable, a myth. So he tells us that his uncle Bozy was likely eaten by cannibals. Yes, you heard that right. Let's listen and try to make sense as he just sits there and stands there and makes up a story, which some people, you know, if you're looking in the right places, fact-checked immediately. The Defense Department, the Pentagon, pointed out that there were no cannibals, there was no island. He was shot down, or he went down on a plane in the ocean. He died. That's sad. Poor Uncle Finnegan, poor Uncle Bozy. But this mythomaniac has to add some drama. Yes, it was an island full of cannibals who probably ate Uncle Bozy. Haiti. Let's watch.
Back in when D-Day occurred, and on Sunday, the next day, my mother's four brothers all went down to the recruiting station and joined the military. Every one of them volunteered. And my uncle, they called him Ambrose Brozy, they called him Bozy. My Uncle Bozy was a hell of an athlete, they tell me, when he was a kid. And he became an Army Air Corps before the Air Force came along. He flew those single-engine planes as reconnaissance over war zones.
Look at him making it up.
He got shot down in New Guinea. And they never found the body because there were a lot of cannibals for real in that part of New Guinea. And then my son volunteered to go to Iraq for a year, and he came back with stage 4 glioblastoma.
Oh, God.
And they gave, like many of you, risked your lives, and you know people who gave their lives to the country for heroes. But one of the things that I, as I was doing that today, I was reminded of what my opponent said in Paris.
He never said it.
Long ago. They asked him to go visit American gravesites. He said no. He wouldn't do it. is they were all suckers and losers. I'm not making that up.
Yes, you are.
Staff was listening to acknowledge it today. Suckers yes. and losers.
Totally made up. Totally debunked.
That man doesn't deserve.
Look at the people behind him. They're just looking, going,
the commander chief for my son.
Oh, God. It's all there. A completely made up story to somehow, you know, glorify Uncle Bozy. His son, always have to inject Bo Biden, who came home with cancer. That's not true. He died 6 years after he came home. And the Trump hoax, the lie, the Trump called them suckers and losers and didn't go to the cemetery. It was weather related. They couldn't take the helicopter to the cemetery because the weather wouldn't let them. And the story was made up by the Atlantic magazine. It's been debunked. It's not true. And he repeated it like three times in the last 2 days. That's all he has. Hoaxes and lies. Hoaxes. That's the campaign. Hoaxes and lies. But it gets worse, I think. I mean, yeah. We got time to play the cut from yesterday. This is so friggin' insane. He's making his campaign appearance at his alleged hometown. It's not his hometown. I hate to break it to you. But he does explain his ties to Scranton. Can we play him explaining, you know, why he has such love for, why he has such attachment to Scranton, Pennsylvania?
Is this the towel one here?
No, we'll get to the towel one. Quickly play the how his, you know, his mother.
Oh, okay. There's so many to choose from.
His mother's from Scranton, he claims. And here's how he knows. Go ahead.
My mom didn't live in Scranton since she was 1954.
I think I can transcribe. My mom didn't live in Scranton since she was 1954. Okay. Does that mean she lived there? She didn't live there. She's 1954 years old. This was his big day because Trump was tied up and he was in a swing state, and the state is, you know, crucial to both campaigns. And he wants you to know his mom didn't live there since 1954. But, and again, you won't hear this on most media. I didn't see it even on, maybe Newsmax played at some point, Fox News, but you certainly won't see it on Morning Joe. The people who claim he's A-OK, tip-top, don't want you to see this. This tangent he went on during his speech on Tuesday in Scranton. But let's try to make some sense out of this. He starts talking about somebody from Scranton, some old politician that he met. And he just goes into this completely made-up story, which, I mean, it is insane. It is insane that anybody thinks, I don't care if you hate Trump. I don't care if you're a dyed-in-the-wool radical Democrat who wants everything he wants, higher taxes, abortion on demand, open border, endless wars. If you want all those things, are you going to tell me he's capable of doing the duty of the president for 4.5 more years? I don't think he's going to make it to November. I've said it many times. I don't think it's possible, but let's listen. This is important. He's got people, a crowd. He's got cameras. He's making his case for Pennsylvania. And this is what he had to say. Go ahead.
One day I showed up at Off Year Convention and I was in the motel after the local motel getting changed after the afternoon session, go back to the evening session. I'd come down with some young activists who
just listen
a
to
little
them.
Older than me, but still young activists who were involved in trying to reform the party. And I was in one of those 8x10 bathrooms, you know, they have shower, toilet, and a sink. And I got a towel on me and shaving cream, and I hear bam, bam, bam at my door really loudly. And I wonder what the hell is that? I thought it was this guy, Bob Cunningham, on a radio show, and a couple other guys. So I said, okay, guys. And I walked to the door and opened it up, and standing there was the former governor of the state of Delaware, Albert N. Carville, a big guy, about 6'5", talked at you like this. and the state representative who got defeated 4 years earlier. That's a Democratic state rep who was retired. And one of the from the family that had more senators appointed than any other family in American history to the tunnels, and a former retired justice and the state chairman. And they said, I'm standing a towel of shaving cream in my face.
Standing with a towel. First of all, if you're by yourself, why do you need the towel? This is from 50 years ago. And somehow he thought it was relevant to bring up at this appearance. God, I mean, I guess the strategy is, you know, cover the news with a pillow until it goes away, because they don't want you to see that.
So the goal
is your president.
The goal is to hear that story and go, I need to vote for this guy.
Yeah, I know. He's supposed to be winning votes. He's supposed to be winning hearts and minds in a swing state. And he's rambling about being in a towel and shaving cream in a bathroom which has a sink, a toilet, and a shower. You know, one of those weird bathrooms. I guess for him, I guess it's you know, his daughter's not in the shower, so I guess, you know, he's
doesn't quite unusual. Feel like home.
Unusual. All right, before we get to Turtle Boy and all this other, we got much to get to, but here's the strategy. Let's just say this guy is purple. The water's not wet. Let's say up is down, left is right. That's what you must do. The story in D.C. right now is Joe Biden is not happy with Merrick Garland because Trump isn't in jail yet. He's not happy with this attack dog attorney general who is doing his bidding, who's doing, you know, putting January 6th people in prison for years, who's putting pro-lifers, who's infiltrating Catholic churches, all on the order of Joe Biden or the people around him. Merrick Garland goes before Congress earlier this week or last week and is asked about the cognitive decline of his boss, Joe Biden, which is so obvious, which is a concern. I mean, we're on the brink of war. The world's on fire. And the man in charge is rambling about showering and shaving cream and Uncle Bozy getting eaten by animals. And the people who support him, they want you to know Trump's a liar. Mm-hmm. You can't trust Trump. He's a liar. There's nobody ever, history of American politics, who lies as often as obviously as Joe Biden. Nobody. There's never been anyone like him. He's incapable of telling the truth. Again, hoaxes and lies. That's all it is. Hoaxes about Trump and lies about Uncle Bozy. Merrick Garland goes before Congress and is asked, have you seen the impairment? Have you seen the decline? And he gets pissed. He lies. This is the attorney general who knows his boss is impaired, to put it kindly. And he gets upset when people notice. That's the way it works. If you notice that your president is a mess, is in the throes of dementia, if you notice, you're the problem. Watch this exchange.
Have you ever seen evidence of impairment in your meetings with the president?
I'm sorry. I testified, and I'll repeat again what I just said.
Well, that's different than my question.
Well, I have seen the president effectively guide the members of the department of his cabinet and his military through.
But you won't say you've ever seen any impairment on his part.
The president has no impairment. The president.
You've never seen any.
I don't know how many ways I can say this. Okay. I have complete confidence in the president, and I reject your characterization.
To review, he was appointed attorney general because he promised to go after Biden's enemies. They knew he was motivated because some of Biden's enemies kept him off the Supreme Court, and they knew he had a score to settle. They knew he had vengeance in his heart, and he's done just that for 3.5 years, but it's not enough for Joe Biden. He needs Trump in prison, and that may be coming. We're 6 or 8 weeks away from the inevitable sentencing phase when the thoroughly corrupt judge, Mershon, is going to try to imprison Trump. But it's going to grind slowly. they're, again, in the midst of jury selection, and they're going to drag it out as much as possible, which is the goal. Keep Trump in court. Keep Trump tied up while that feeble old man shuffles around swing states. And all right, before we move on to the other trial of the century, we got to play this from yesterday. If you're keeping an eye on the war in Gaza, we all know Biden has already sold out our ally. Israel has already told him, you know, we need a ceasefire now. Biden tweeted yesterday that 3,000 trucks with humanitarian aid have gone into Gaza. Now, it's probably made up. That's a lot of trucks. How many hostages have come out? Zero. So we have this endless stream of aid for Hamas, which they steal. We know that. They shoot Palestinian kids if they get near the trucks. 3,000 trucks have gone in. Zero hostages have come out. He doesn't care about the hostages. And he is, let me make this clear. I mean, he says, let me make it clear. Let you have the cut where he wants to make sure Israel doesn't go into a city. Play this.
And I made it clear to Israelis, don't move on Haifa. It's just not, I mean, anyway, I just.
Anyway. Okay. Don't move on Haifa. Haifa is a city in Israel. They're not going to move into Haifa. They're already there, you bozo. He's demanding they don't go into one of their own cities. Man, this is going to be a wild 6 months. He's determined to undermine Israel and placate the maniacs who are protesting from coast to coast. He's determined to appease his radical left-wing base, the Squad. We'll get to the Squad, I hope, if we have time. We'll get to the Squad. None of whom will condemn death to America chants. None of whom will condemn burning American flags. You know what they were doing yesterday in New York? They were chanting support for bin Laden and burning American flags in New York. And no Democrat, except John Fetterman, will condemn them. That's where we are right now. If you're a Democrat, if you're a Biden supporter, your side is burning the flag, our flag, and chanting death to America. All right, let's get to it. Let's get to Turtle Boy and the other trial of the century, the murder trial of Karen Reed, which is underway in Dedham Court. And nobody is affecting the case and covering the case like our guy, Turtle Boy. We'll get to that, but first.
Excuse me.
We all know the stock market has seen unprecedented fluctuation over the past 3 years, and I'm just going to guess that's going to continue for at least another year. Well, silver has historically been considered a safe haven asset during times of market volatility. When uncertainty rises, investors often turn to precious metals like silver to preserve wealth and hedge against economic instability. The silver to gold ratio is at record levels. Gold is currently at an all-time high, whereas silver is below 50% of its all-time high. A ratio like this is unheard of and provides a great time to add silver to your collection. Well, CSN Mint has been providing certified U.S. Mint collectible coins and precious metals for over 20 years, and they are one of the most trusted names in numismatics. Explore CSN Mint's extensive catalog of bullion bars, coins, and numismatic collectibles. Whether you're a seasoned investor or a passionate collector, you'll find a diverse range of products to suit your needs and preferences. Rest assured that every product you purchase includes the original certificate of authenticity or is certified and graded by a third-party grader to ensure origin and purity. With CSN Mint, you can build your collection with confidence. If you're going to collect something, it might as well be money. So go to csnmint.com/Jerry and use promo code Jerry at checkout to get a free silver American Eagle over a $30 value with your purchase of $75 or more.
Hey.
Wow, there he is.
What's happening?
Turtle Boy, I guess we should give you a real name. I don't think I've ever said your real name. Aiden Kearney.
Yeah. Carney. That's all
right. Carney. I just asked, whatever. You know, it's amazing. We knew you when. You have gone national. You've gone international. This is the case that's changed everything for you, I'm guessing. Changed your life.
And a little bit.
A little bit. I'm glad you could squeeze us in between national TV appearances. But things are underway in Dedham Court right now. Karen Reed is on trial for her life. You blew this case up a long time ago. I find it amazing that it is, they're going through with it. That it is actually happening. Are you surprised that we're sitting here, that she's on trial, that they are actually trying to put her away for life?
Yeah, I'm pretty shocked by it. Not shocked. Nothing shocks me anymore. But I would not have bet that this would happen because more than anything, it's going to be a disaster for the Commonwealth. I don't know what their plan is here. They must know deep in their hearts they have no shot whatsoever of convicting this woman because she's completely innocent. But my concern for them and why I didn't think they'd go through with this is they're going to implicate themselves in this. They're going to look horrible in this. They're going to show that their witnesses are a bunch of lying, cop-killing scumbags and that the police who helped orchestrate this are corrupt and can't be trusted. So I don't know why they're choosing to put a national spotlight on their own incompetence and corruption, but they are.
You obviously have been involved here for a long time. At what point were you convinced that she was innocent? At what point were you convinced there was a cover-up?
The second I read about it. It was
really?
Like, it was undeniable. Like the second I read the court filings on this case and saw the evidence, I was baffled by like, how is this still going on? And I assumed it would be a one and done story that I would write about it. And then the next day it would be dropped after that Google search came out at 2:27 right. Showing that Jennifer McCabe Googled how long to die in cold at 2:27 when she thought John O'Keefe was at home in bed. And I said, they can't go forward with this. Obviously they're going to drop this. And then they doubled down. And that's when I realized that, oh, this is a lot bigger than some murder. This is widespread corruption from powerful people who think that they can get away with it. And it's just blown my mind every day that this has gone on, the extent that these people are willing to go to. Like, I didn't foresee myself getting arrested. I didn't see myself going to jail. I didn't picture that one when I first started writing about this. Actually, a year ago today is the first part one I wrote of this. And here we are. A lot has changed in the last year.
So is the state still sticking to the story, alleging that she got behind the wheel drunk and ran him over and killed him? Is that what they're alleging today? Or is the story, have the allegations changed?
No, that's still the story that they're going with, that she backed into him with her car. Apparently he just stood there and that he drove 62 feet forward, that she drove 62 feet forward in front of the neighbor's house, idled her car. He stood there in the middle of the road on the side of the house, not like near the driveway, just stood there and just waited for her to run him over. And she backed up 62 feet, accelerated to 24 miles an hour in the snow. Mind you, I tried recreating that at that scene. I tried hitting 24 miles an hour in reverse in 62 feet. It's impossible. It feels like you're dying. Like it feels like you're about to crash. I hit the curb. I maximum speed I got was 19 miles an hour. I actually hit the curb when I did it. And because the road is on a curve, Karen Reed would have to be a Formula One race car driver who can excel in blizzards and reach speeds that aren't humanly possible. And John O'Keefe would have had to just stand there and just get run over by this car and then somehow landed on the grass and somehow had no broken bones, no bruises on his body whatsoever, a 3-inch gash in the back of his head, dog bites on his arms, and two black eyes. Somehow that came from Alexis hitting him in reverse. Alexis, by the way, was completely fine, except for a taillight, which is shattered to absolute smithereens and found in 35 pieces on 6 undocumented trips by the state police detective who happens to be best friends with the homeowners. And by the way, the Canton police, when they searched the scene at 6 o'clock and they found his body, there was no taillight there. They found no taillight. There had been less than an inch of snow that had fallen, no taillight. But the state police, once they took over and the lead investigator is best friends with the people who live in the house, they coincidentally found all sorts of taillight after more than a foot of snow had fallen. And then they found more taillight over the next 3 weeks on undocumented trips.
Did she know she was innocent right off the bat?
I think at first it sounded like she was in a state of trauma and panic. She started to allegedly say at the scene, like, did I hit him? Could I have hit him? She didn't know. I mean, because you find this body there, the last thing you're thinking of, and it's in the exact spot where you were last parked. Like, she was parked there waiting for him to text her back after she dropped him off the house. And she didn't hear from him. And these people kind of put it in her head, like, could you have hit him? Like, did you, you know, maybe you did this. And she started, because the last thing she's thinking is, yeah, he got murdered in that house there. And then they left him out to die in the cold. Like, no, who would ever think that? She didn't first start putting this together until 3 days later, the day after she was arrested on February 2nd, a guy by the name of Steve Scanlon came to the house. He's a former friend of Brian Albert, the Boston cop who owns the house where the body was found. And Steve Scanlon came to them and said that he knew more about this and that John was inside that house and that he was beaten up by Brian Albert, his nephew, and who happened to be in the house named Colin Albert, and an ATF agent who we later found out was named Brian Higgins. And how would Steve Scanlon know this information? He said, I interviewed Scanlon and I said, how did you go to Yannetti on her attorney on a hunch like this? Why would you go to him? He's like, I don't know. It didn't sound right. The injuries didn't sound right. And I said, well, how would you know what the injuries were if the autopsy photos weren't out yet on February 2nd? And he was being really evasive. And it became pretty clear this guy wanted to blow the whistle, but not like go the full distance because he knew these people. He probably didn't want to be a witness against them. But the fact of the matter is he couldn't have known the information that he gave them without seeing the autopsy photos. So something was up. And that was the first time Karen Reed first, it was like the aha moment. Like, I knew I didn't do this. Like, something, I knew there had to be something more to this. And ever since then, they've been, you know, investigating based off of that, you know, what they were initially told. And it's been proven to be correct over time.
So how did John O'Keefe, Boston cop John O'Keefe, how did he die? And are you 100% convinced of your theory?
I don't know who delivered the fatal blow. It's not my job to figure that out. It's the state police's job. They could probably figure it out pretty easily if they did a normal investigation into this. But what I do know is that he went inside that house. He went inside 34 Fairview Road because his Apple Health data shows him ascending and descending stairs, which you can't do inside Karen Reed's car. And so my guess is that he went in there and a fight happened. He also had defensive bruises on his fist. Looks like he punched something. And so a fight clearly broke out in there. And I don't know how it happened, but he got a laceration in the back of the head. So somebody hit him with something back there. And he probably started to convulse, bleed everywhere. There's puke on his boxer shorts. And what are they going to do? They can't chop up the body and throw him in the river. Their best bet was to put him back on the lawn where they last saw Karen Reed and just say, he never came in the house. I don't know what happened.
Your cover-up theory involves a lot of people. That's, I think, why some people are skeptical. It just seems like there's so many people involved. How many?
It really doesn't, though. Like, a lot of people say that, and they're like, how can this happen? All it takes is a couple people, and then trusting that people will trust our institutions. Like, for instance, Michael Proctor was not initially in on this cover-up. Like, it was just the people that were inside the house. There was 11 people inside that house. Only 4 of them were questioned by police, right? Now, if you have 11 people speaking to police, then people can mix up the stories. They can say something wrong, and that's how they get you. But if you can guarantee that you will know the lead detective, which they did, and you can all just tell the same really simple story. He didn't come in the house. That's it. He just did. I don't know what happened to him. He didn't come in the house. That's all I know. The problem with that story is that all 11 of those people left the house and not a single one of them saw a 217-pound body lying 12 feet from the curb. Not one of them saw him because they couldn't have said they saw him because the next logical question would be, why didn't you call police? From there, it's just a matter of people trusting our institutions. Like the state police detective who's in charge, his boss isn't going to, you know, assume he's lying, and his boss isn't going to assume his lying, and people aren't going to, they don't want to go there. They don't want to go and accuse a Boston police officer and his nephew and an ATF agent of murdering another Boston cop. They don't want to go there. And people trust our institutions. And the medical examiner says that the medical examiner, who, by the way, when she came up with this finding that he was not in a fight, which they never say. They never say what you didn't do. She actually put this in the report. He wasn't in a fight. They were breathing down her neck. The state police were standing over her while she reached this conclusion. And she said that there was no defensive sign. There's no signs of a fight. He's got blood. He's got bruised knuckles. Like anybody who's ever punched a wall before and broken their right fifth metacarpal knows what that looks like. That's clearly what that was. It was a boxer's fracture. And so, yeah, I mean, it's just like, I mean, the district attorney just trusts the state police. Right. And because they don't want to, we don't want to assume that our institutions would lie to us like this. So it's really, it starts as a small group of people. And from there, it's just a matter of people trusting the institutions. But at this point, you know, there's just way too much evidence. I see a commenter saying like they gave the dog away. He had dog bites on his arms, and they have a man eating dog in there who has sent two people to the hospital, to the ER, and the dog's gone. It was the family dog, and it's just gone. They sold the house. They ripped up the basement floor. The house, by the way, was never searched. If you have a dead body on your front lawn, Jerry, they're coming in your house. But not in this guy's yard. They found a dead body on his lawn. He never came outside to say what's going on here, and they never searched his house. By the way, John O'Keefe was found one shoe. Where was his other shoe? It had to be in the house, right? That would be the next logical conclusion that you would reach if you found a dead body on the lawn. They never thought to search the house, which is the kind of privilege you get when your name is Brian Albert and your brother Kevin Albert is a detective on the Canton Police Department, and your good friend is Michael Proctor, and he's the lead detective in the case that's investigating the dead body on your front lawn. It all works out pretty well.
Tell us about the Google search, because you've written, as we said, 300 blogs. That was probably the biggest bombshell. I mean, that's the thing. You read, you hear, and you go, wait a second. She made a Google search at 2:30 in the morning?
2:27 a.m. for how long to die in cold.
How long to die in cold?
Yep.
This was a woman who was in the house.
The sister-in-law of the homeowner, Brian Albert, who is not only in the house, she's the one that invited John over there to begin with. And she left the house at 1:47 a.m. and drove directly past where the body would have been. So she Googled that at 2:27 and then deleted it. She also deleted all of her calls between 5 and 9 a.m. She handed over her phone to the state police, who did a full data extraction, quotations, full data extraction, and didn't find any of these deleted calls, any of these deleted Google searches, nothing. The defense has a right to also look at the phone. They had their expert look at it, and boom, look what they found. All this stuff the state police miraculously didn't find, right? And they claim their software that they used wasn't updated enough. The state police Ooh. Didn't have the software to find deleted messages and calls in 2022. Sure thing. And so the basically, why would she Google how long to die in cold at 2:27 a.m. if she thought that John O'Keefe never came in the house, if he was just assumed he went home, right? He was probably home sleeping. Why would she Google that? The answer is that John O'Keefe's body was not yet on the lawn at 2:27 a.m. We know this because the plow driver that I tracked down and interviewed, the police never spoke with this guy. I had to go find him. In the police report, they said that no one plowed Fairview Road that night. I didn't think that sounded right. So I started talking to people in Canton, and I found the guy who does the Fairview Road. He works for the Canton DPW. His name is Brian Lucky Loughran. And I went and called him in August, and I had a 5-minute interview with him. And he told me that there was no body on the lawn at 2:30 a.m., that had there been a body there, he 100% would have seen it, and that he went by at 3 o'clock and he saw a Ford Edge parked there. Three members of the Albert family own a Ford Edge. So again, if Karen Reed hit him at 12:30, then the body should be there at 2:30, but it wasn't. And then a Ford Edge appears at 3, and then the body is found in that exact same location 3 hours later. And the state police never interviewed Lucky Loughran. I interviewed him. He told me he had already spoken with the FBI, that they had tracked him down at that point because they got GPS from his truck. So they knew that he was there. And so this is what this whole cover-up has been. They're not doing normal police work that you, like, they could find out who killed John O'Keefe in 5 seconds if they really wanted to. This is a dead police officer in town. And they're allowing Karen Reed to take the fall for it because it's better than the alternative. They don't have to go after their buddies now. And
did
so
you think, did you think when the FBI got involved, when the U.S. attorney got involved, did you think it would change, that the cover up would unravel?
It has. The U.S. attorney's office investigation, which is ongoing, by the way, has revealed quite a bit of information. Their experts have determined that John could not have been possibly hit by a car, that it's inconsistent with getting hit by a car. They've gone through their text messages. They found out that Julie Albert, the mother of Colin Albert, the 17-year-old who was in the house and had an issue with John O'Keefe, and they were neighbors, and he had thrown beer cans on John's lawn and had a lot of animosity towards him, probably would have been considered a prime suspect during a normal investigation. Colin's this punk jock meathead who makes a lot of threatening videos, gets in fights all the time. And he would have normally been considered the prime suspect, but he was never questioned by police. On February 1st, the day Karen Reed was arrested, the FBI investigation has shown that Colin's mother, Julie, texted Michael Proctor, the lead detective, and said, "We want to give you a thank you gift for the job you've done in this investigation." A thank you gift. There, remember, on the day Karen Reed's arrested, thanking the lead investigator who didn't investigate her son. And instead of saying that's improper, whatever, Michael Proctor, who has known Colin Albert since he was a boy, he was the ring bearer in his sister's wedding, and he sat at Julie, Chris, and Colin Albert's table at the, I tracked down their wedding video from 2012. I got videos of them all dancing together. They all know each other. And instead of telling Julie Albert that's improper, I can't accept a gift from a witness in this case, he said, "Give it to my wife, Elizabeth."
Wow.
Yeah.
See, this, every time I read you, listen to you, talk to you, I say this can't go forward. They can't proceed with this, but they are. Day three of jury selection. What do you think is going to happen in this trial? What, I mean, how is it going to, how are they going to continue to try to put this woman in prison for the rest of her life? How is this going to work?
One of two things is going to happen. Either this is going to be a complete shit show and she's going to be found not guilty. That's option one. Option two is that the FBI is giving the Commonwealth and the state police, who they are investigating, the rope to hang themselves. And what I mean by that is they're going to allow them to present evidence in court that the FBI knows is fraudulent, that the FBI knows that they know is untrue, right? They're going to they're just going to see how far. It's a game of chicken. They're going to see how far the Commonwealth and the state police are willing to push this. Are they going to go all the way on this woman? And I think there's a chance that halfway through the trial, the feds come down with indictments and put a stop to this. Because they did previously say on January 18th that they could not, in good faith, allow this to go to trial, that they would release the findings of their investigation. And they hoped that an ethical district attorney or an ethical judge would dismiss this case. And they've given a buttload of information that a normal district attorney and a normal judge would use to dismiss a murder indictment. But that didn't happen in this case. So they're going to have to basically do it. Unless they start arresting people and indicting people, this is going, it's very clear this is going to go forward. So those are our two options.
How many of the principals, the people involved in the, would you claim, would you allege as a cover-up, say the four principals, how many of them will be called as witnesses? And if they are, does the defense team get to introduce this other theory?
Yeah, they're all listed as witnesses in this case. The lead investigator is obviously Michael Proctor, is listed as a witness in this case. And it is going to be a disaster upon cross-examination. And will the third party culprit be allowed? Yeah, they allow it on, the judge is allowing that defense, which is a perfectly valid defense to use, on cross-examination. They can't bring it up in their opening statements, but they can, these are skilled lawyers. They know how to, they can get it out of these witnesses about the third party culprit defense.
Wow. So some of these guys are going to be on the witness stand and her lawyers are going to be allowed to go at them. And
they're going to ask Jennifer McCabe about the 227 Google search, right? All about it. And she's going to have to explain it. She's going to have to explain why she called Nicole Albert, her sister, at 607 and 608, and then had a conversation with her. The same Nicole Albert and Brian Albert who didn't come out of the house when there was a dead body on their lawn. They answered a phone call, so they were awake. They knew something was going on outside. Neither of them came out. Jennifer McCabe is going to have to explain why she told the 911, why she never told the 911 dispatcher that she was outside her sister's house. Because the 911 dispatcher tells her to get blankets and she can't find any blankets. She forgets to tell them, oh yeah, I'm outside my sister's house. I can just go inside and get a blanket in there. She doesn't tell them that. So they're going to have a lot of explaining to do. Brian Albert's going to have to explain why a 29-year veteran of the Boston Police Department didn't come outside when a dead body was on his front lawn. Why that never happened. Why he lied to the state grand jury and said that he was sleeping. And then the FBI found his phone records and found that he called Brian Higgins, the ATF agent, at 2:22. He then explained that away. He claimed that he called the ATF agent at 2:22 because he was having sex with his wife and butt dialed Brian Higgins during sexual intercourse with his wife at 2:22 a.m. I mean, this is the kind of lies these people are going to have to tell a jury. Imagine them ever hearing that and not bursting out with laughter.
I should know this, but are there cameras in the courtroom?
Yes, there will be one pool camera in the courtroom that will be televising all of this, and it's going to be must-see TV.
Are you on the witness list?
I did not make the witness list. We thought there was a chance. My lawyer thought there was a chance I would be, at least for, I mean, for both sides. I mean, the defense would like to bring up my reporting on this and reference that because I've done, found a lot of major bombshells in this case. But at the same time, the goal of the Commonwealth, you know, the reason they brought these bogus charges on me is to just kind of smear my reputation. They want to say, that guy, see that guy breaking all the stories over there? He's bad. He's a felon. Don't listen to him. Like that, that's all this arrest was about, was just to damage my reputation. And they would love nothing more than to tie Karen Reed to me and say, well, Karen Reed's directing the witness intimidation. So I think her team is a little bit weary of that. And for that reason, and I'm happy because witnesses can't go in the courtroom either. They can't attack.
I got to ask you about your time behind bars, because your blogs from behind bars were fascinating, and the buffer zone. I mean, you've affected this case in so many ways. Let me take a quick break, and then we'll get to that.
Excuse me.
Today's Callahan Show is sponsored by MyPillow. Go to MyPillow.com, use code word Jerry, G-E-R-R-Y, for huge discounts. For example, the standard MyPillow, normally $69.98, is only $19.98 with code word Jerry. MyPillow is made in the USA, comes with a 10-year warranty and a 60-day money-back guarantee. It's machine washable and dryable. It's the most comfortable pillow you'll ever sleep on. It makes a great gift. Get it now to support this show and strike back against cancel culture. As you know, Mike Lindell is constantly under attack from the cancel culture mob. By purchasing from MyPillow, not only are you helping us out, but you're joining the fight against cancel culture. MyPillow, as you know, not available in big box stores, but you can get factory direct pricing if you order from MyPillow.com using code word Jerry. MyPillow.com, code word Jerry, 800-893-7406, promo code Jerry. You did 60 days in lockup.
I did.
Is that correct?
Yeah, hard time, Jerry, hard time.
Yes, well, it wasn't that hard. I read your blogs, and you're out. You might go back for witness intimidation.
I hope not. I mean, I'm not going to get convicted. I'm not the least bit worried about that, but I am out on bail, which bothers me because, you know, you say the wrong thing and then they throw you back in there. So I got to be really careful with my words.
What did you do to earn this hard time?
Well, I was out on bail for these bogus witness intimidation charges, which is nothing more than time-honored journalism. I went up to these people and asked them questions in public. I went up to Jennifer McCabe at her kid's lacrosse game and asked her, why'd you Google how long to die in cold at 2:27 a.m.? And she laughed at me and thought it was very funny. And on my way out, I repeatedly called her a cop killer, which is the most accurate term I can use to describe her because she helped murder a Boston police officer. And so I was out on bail with that. And I was seeing a woman who turned out to be a bit of a psychopath. And
you can pick him, Turtle Boy.
I can pick him, Jerry. And so she pretended to be pregnant in November when I wanted to end things. And that kept me around for a bit. And she pretended to have a couple abortions. And it was just a wild, wild, insane ride that she put me on. And I finally realized this woman's lying about the pregnancy. So I ended things. She went to the state police 3 days later and said that she had information to give them. She really didn't have anything. I haven't told her anything special like that. And they made her a witness in my case. She then lured me to her apartment on December 23rd with a grand. She showed me a picture of a subpoena she received. And I said, how do you know the state police? Like, how do the state police know who you are? And she said, I'll explain it all in person. I'm so scared. They're coming for me. So she lured me over there. And like a sucker, I went over there. And she was going to show me the contents of her phone and all the messages she had with the state police. And she did. But lo and behold, the whole time I was over there, she was actually on the phone with the state police. The whole thing was a setup to begin with. And when I left there at, I attempted to leave there at 3 a.m. She wanted me to sleep over. And I told her, I have to go home. It's now Christmas Eve morning and I have to leave. And she did not let me leave. And so she then took the abortion pill, apparently, even though she's not pregnant, at 3 a.m. and started screaming at me and woke her 4 kids up who were aged 2, 3, 5, and 11, told them to get in the car. We're going to drive from Medfield to Holden and mommy's going to crash and bleed out in his driveway. And so for the safety of those children, I agreed to just sit there and wait for her to fall asleep, which she did. Finally, I left at 5 a.m. I was so exhausted that on my way home, I fell asleep behind the wheel of my car and crashed on 495. So that's how I spent my Christmas Eve. Hours later, she went to police with the state police. She didn't even call the police. The state police called the Medfield police for her and said that I assaulted her. And of course, there's no evidence of this. There's no bruises, nothing. No, like it's completely made up. And, but doesn't matter. In this state, somebody says you assaulted it. Somebody's got to get arrested in a domestic. So a warrant is put out for my arrest. My bail is revoked. I spent Christmas as a fugitive and my bail was revoked on my birthday of all days on December 26th. And I was sentenced to 90 days in jail. We got that knocked down to 60 and I got out.
Are you worried they're coming after you? Because these people, according to you, according to the evidence, killed a cop.
Yeah. Oh, they're not going to stop. They're now using this woman. She's like the biggest gift to them ever. Like when I, on February 26th, my third day out, I went to a Karen Reed hearing. This woman has never been to a Karen Reed hearing in her life. Okay. And keep in mind, she met when she first messaged me, she sent me a picture of herself in a free Karen Reed shirt and called me daddy. And she said that, you know, I really love the work you're doing. You're saving this innocent woman, blah, blah, blah. Well, now that things have gone bad, she showed up to court with Jennifer McCabe, holding her restraining order, which would force me to be evicted from the courtroom. And I left and I went across the street where a dead end police officer told me to go. And 10 minutes later, court gets out. I didn't even see her. Apparently she claims I came within 100 yards of her accidentally. And I was charged with violating a restraining order for being within 100 yards of her. And they tried to revoke my bail over that. Didn't work this time. And so they're going to continue to try to use this woman as a way. I'm sure they're going to send her to the Karen Reed trial to try to get me evicted and prevent me from doing my reporting in that courtroom. There's not going to stop.
Are you allowed in court?
So not if she shows up, not as of right now. So we're working, we have a hearing on the 26th to get the order amended so that I can, regardless of whether or not this order stays in place, I can continue to work at the hearings because it's my workplace. You know, it's like if I worked at Target and she kept showing up at Target, would I have to leave too? You know, you need to get the order amended. Like she's seeking me out. She's supposedly in fear. She's going to wherever I am. And so this is kind of the opposite of what an order is supposed to be.
This is going to be a hell of a movie, Turtle Boy, a hell of a book. Are you going to write a book?
Yeah, oh yeah. I'm in talks to get a book published. I've been working with a documentary company since last August. Pretty big name, though I can't say yet. And they're working on finding a buyer for the documentary right now. And so we'll see. Stay tuned.
Now you have... You have a lot of supporters, and she has, Karen Reed has a lot of supporters, but they're not allowed within what, 200 yards of the courthouse?
200 feet. That's correct. You're not 200 allowed. Feet. Yeah. They have a little, they set up cones where you're allowed, or the First Amendment exists outside of those cones. And so, you know, I went the first day and there's tons of people outside of those cones. You cannot drive to that courthouse without seeing all these protesters. So if the goal was to silence these people and make sure that people, you know, don't see the signs and free Karen Reed, it's failing miserably. And everyone's wearing pink for Karen Reed as a way to show support and solidarity for her. So, you know, they'll get a jury. They've already got 11 jurors. They need to get 5 more. But it doesn't matter who they pick on the jury. No jury's ever going to convict this woman, ever.
But it's expected, just like Trump, to last 6 to 8 weeks. And I assume the drama will build and it's going to be big when they get to the end of this trial, when they get to the verdict.
Yeah. Or if indictments happen, that'll be even bigger. I mean, this will be the biggest story in the country. Megyn Kelly finally caught on to this, been trying to get her attention for quite some time. Big Megyn Kelly fan. I'm getting now that the trial has started, the good part about getting arrested and charged with this is I've become interwoven with the story. So when people search this and read about it, I come up. Like, it's impossible to tell the story of Karen Reed without talking about the story of Turtle Boy. So it's definitely going to be good for what I do for a living. My bottom line is certainly not going to be hurt by this. All they did was make me more famous by arresting me and putting me on camera and, quite frankly, making me look like, a badass because I'm out there going after the man and doing the work that no other journalist will do. And everybody knows I'm innocent and I got supporters all over the place. So it's completely backfired.
I got to ask, you went up to Jennifer McCabe and said, why did you Google how long does it take a body to freeze or whatever?
Yep.
Did the Globe also do that? The Boston Globe do that?
No, they haven't done it. They just recently took an interest in this story. They actually, I've yet to hear from any media outlets kind of condemning this attack on journalism, because that's what this is. When I would go to the Karen Reed court dates, Jennifer McCabe would go. She sits with the O'Keefe family. She helped kill their son, and she rubs their shoulders like a psychopath and sits with them. And so I see her come out and, just Google searches out there. Everyone knows it happened. It's like no one wants to talk to her except for me. Okay. So I start asking her questions and she leaves. She stops coming. So I go to her kids' lacrosse game, which is perfectly legal. We held protests in town. We went to the homes of Jennifer McCabe, Michael Proctor, Brian Albert, and Julie Nagel, who was also in the house. We peacefully demonstrated for 7 minutes outside of each of their homes, explained what they did. No one was hurt. Nothing was vandalized. It was a nice sunny day in July. There were women and children there, hundreds of nice people. And we were all just looking for justice for John O'Keefe. And they've turned that into a felony. They now say that it's felony witness intimidation, only on my part. No one else was charged with witness intimidation, even though they're all there, just me. So they're saying that is felony witness intimidation because you're not allowed to picket outside the homes of witnesses. Now, remember last year with Roe versus Wade, right? When they were trying to overturn that. Mobs showing up at the homes of Justice Kavanaugh, all these other people, perfectly legal. All that was all legal. But when I peacefully protest for 7 minutes outside of the home of a woman who Googled how long to die in cold because she helped murder a Boston cop, it's felony witness intimidation. I'm a bad
guy. What do the Boston cops think of this case?
They know it's bullshit. None of them come. I mean, anytime a cop is killed, the courtroom is packed. Like Mike Chestnut was killed in 2018. His courtroom was packed with Weymouth cops in uniform there to show their support for him all the time. I've yet to see a Boston cop at any of these hearings, and I've gone to all of them.
Well, we could do this for hours, Turtle Boy. As you know, it's just such a wild case. Are you expecting, when this trial is over, more trials, like at least four more trials?
Oh, yeah, a lot more than four. I mean, all the people who will cover this up, they're all going to get indicted. I have no doubt about it. And except it's going to be a Moakley courthouse in South Boston instead of Dedham.
Wow. So it's only just begun. I got to say, Karen Reed does not look nervous when she's going in and out of court.
She's one of the most confident people I've ever met. She comes because she knows that the FBI is investigating this. She knows that they're not going to let this one go, that they have not wasted 18 months in resources, and that they're not going to let a Boston cop get murdered and a bunch of townies get away with covering it up. So she's very confident. She knows the facts are on her side. I'm sure deep down, she's got to be a little bit worried, right? I mean, who wouldn't be? But, I think she projects confidence because she wants people to know that she's innocent.
Do you trust the FBI on this case?
I do. I do trust the FBI. I mean, the FBI is... they took down Whitey Bulger, right? I mean, they locally, at least, they took down the mayor of Fall River. If you go on the U.S. Attorney's Office under the direction of Josh Levy, like, they've done a tremendous job of going after crooked cops. Those state troopers a few months ago were selling CDL licenses, right? They go out, they get public corruption is what they do. So I have full confidence that they're going to get to the bottom of this.
All right. Well, it is only day three of a trial that's supposed to last a couple of months. So there'll be much more drama. And if you want to read about it, where do you go?
TBDailyNews.com.
TBDailyNews.com. Man, you have come a long way.
Thanks, Jerry.
Still doing Ratchet Madness?
Yes, Canton Ratchet Madness, though. It's just for the Canton.
Just for Canton. The town is Canton, and it seems like half the town is involved here one way or the other. It just must be a wild place right now.
Canton, it is.
All right, thanks, Turtle Boy. Keep it up, man. Jerry.
Talk to you later.
You too. Thanks, bud. It is just an amazing story. And I got to say, one of the reasons I waited, I read Turtle Boy, of course. Again, if you want to read something just really compelling, read his blogs from jail, because it is just great stuff about what it's like to be in lockup and to be targeted by some really corrupt people. It is great stuff. And obviously he's covering the case, the trial, and all the details. He's doing journalism. You can hate him if you want, but this is journalism. He's uncovering a widespread cover-up. And I assume the Globe is looking the other way, and they're busy covering, you know, the transgender farmer in Vermont or something. They got more important things. But Turtle Boy is all over it, and he will continue to be. And this, I can't even imagine what's going to happen when they put these people on the stand. Karen Reed's lawyers get to ask anything. It's just going to get crazy. And fortunately, unlike Trump's trial, this one will be on camera, which is going to be big. And he's right. Megyn Kelly's going to get involved, and, you know, other national figures. It has gone national. It'll soon go international. Pretty soon you're going to have, you know, wall-to-wall coverage of this case, and Turtle Boy will be right in the middle of it. Looking forward to that. But it's going to be a big, big, big deal. It's already big, and it's getting bigger. I mean, there are even places like, you know, CNN and New York Times, they don't like cops, you know? They don't like cops. And we got a dead cop and some other cops involved. So I can't imagine how big this is going to get. But it is only day three in New York for Donald Trump and in Dedham, Mass., for Karen Reed, two huge trials, and they've just begun. Both are in the jury selection phase, so stay tuned. But that will do it for today. We will get to the Hamas caucus in Congress, none of whom will denounce burning the American flag or chanting death to America, or I assume people cheering for Bin Laden in New York City, burning the flag and chanting, cheering for Osama Bin Laden. Man, we have crossed the Rubicon. We got that video, but we'll save it. We'll get to it tomorrow. We'll be on top of this case too. We will follow it closely and keep you updated on this case and the Trump trial. But that'll do it for this Thursday. Thanks, Ironhead. You think Turtle Boy was any good?
Oh, he knows that like the back of his hand. I believe
God, that mind. I mean, he's a lunatic, but man, does he know every little detail? This is what someone at the Globe, at the Herald, at the local, you know, this is what someone hell at the New York Times is supposed to be doing. He's doing their jobs for him. Hopefully they will wake up and kind of follow along. But, we will see. But thanks, Ironhead. Thanks to everybody for listening. This is the Callahan Show. I'm Jerry Callahan, and we will do it again tomorrow.
But I'm going to go to bed.